asked me to speak about Knox's social justice outreach to the wider community on this occasion of the 110th anniversary. As well as the above topic, I've been asked to speak about my family's connection to Knox. It began with a knock on the door of her family home in Andrews in 1948. Standing there was Dr. United Church minister in Parksville. Finding out my parents had been married in United Church, he pointedly suggested that we should attend church. And this began a 71-year association with Knox. Following Dr. Cook was Dr. Peter Kelly, a leader in the Haida Nation. He had been ordained in the Methodist Church, and as well as church settlements, had spent many years on the Thomas Crosby mission board. I left home in 1956, but a strong connection remained with Knox until the mid-80s when my parents died, and resumed when Bob and I retired to Parksville in 1997. Marriages, baptisms, and burials at Knox were part of the life of my family, Bob's family, and our family. I've chosen to speak about Knox's social justice outreach to the wider community in three ways: principles, projects, and people. Under principles, in 1989, Knox voted to accept the new United Church policy to ordain gay and lesbian clergy. It had a devastating effect on the Knox congregation, and almost one-third of the members left with the minister, but remaining members rallied to build the congregation up again. Marriage of same-sex partners were ratified in 2000s, and Knox officially became an affirming church in 2014. Under projects, I have listed, Knox has always been one of the staunchest supporters of the United Church's mission and service plan. There's also been wide support for special offerings to local, such as the Food Bank and Haven House, national and international causes, such as the Food Grains Bank, climate disasters, and political conflicts. The first refugee sponsorship began in 1980 with the arrival of a South Asian family in France. They only remained in the area for a year before joining other Vietnamese families in Vancouver. Almost 20 years later, the Kadovsky family arrived from Yugoslavia and soon became Canadian citizens. Mother Olga and Father Zoran remain in the area, while daughter Anita is married with children in Calgary, and son George is using his kinesiology training in Australia. Most recently, our refugee funds help families from Lebanon and Syria. A senior housing project on an Evergreen student in Parksville was initiated by a Knox member. In the 80s, Knox and community members participated in this endeavor. Use of our sacred space over the years has included programs for the community. The community outreach poster displayed at Fall Fair Times lists the current Knox involvement. Earlier programs included a mom and talks program, exercise programs, and rich luncheons to raise outreach money. Although not focused on social justice issues always, the Lenten Lecture Series, later to become the Spring Lecture Series, invited the community to reflect on pressing social and environmental topics. Other specific film showings, speakers, and community roundtables encouraged dialogue. Knox hosted an overly successful forum for the 2016 election. People. Whenever we take a tally of what volunteer time Knox folks give to the community outside the church, we are amazed. We should do it again soon. I acknowledge that I risk missing someone out of the following list, but it gives you an idea of community involvement over the years. Clay and Lorraine Thompson were proclaimed Citizens of the Year in 1985. Marsh Leffler was considered the park's culinary historian and worked for many years with the Historical Society. At one point in the early 2000s, Knox had many retired ministers and their spouses in the congregation. The Raymonds worked with the refugees, the Gracies were involved with an extensive visioning program, the Connors with youth and environmental issues, the Afflecks with many, many aspects of outreach, and currently the McIntyres providing ministerial service to Denver Island. International work has called some of our members. Margaret Edwards spent time in the educational program in Angola. Wendy and Don Reamer worked with high school girls in Kenya, and the Duns and Walkers participated in rotary building projects in Mexico. I must mention my mother, Pauline Tuzo, who in 1968 co-founded SOS, the Society of Organized Services, with teacher Edith Chamberlain and public health nurse Betty Marucci, who is a relative of Don White's husband. These women were responding to identified needs of low-income students and their families. The thrift shop, which was set up to fund this need, has had many Knox volunteers. Other needs in the community soon became apparent: homemakers, haven homes, medical drivers, seniors' issues, and mental health concerns. Out of the SOS mental health program, Forward House was born. Ann Pauline was an early volunteer, as are Don Smith and Sylvia Nixdorf today. One of the original programs of the SOS is what we now know as Caring for Kids at Christmas. A toy shop of donated new toys is set up in the SOS building for registered low-income families to pick a toy for each child, a family gift, and a local grocery store gift card, allowing the family to choose food that is meaningful for them over the holidays. I will close by reminding the generous folks in Knox of the collection of unwrapped gifts for the SOS Christmas program on White Gift Sunday, December the 8th. That's 2 weeks today. You will notice a list of suggested gifts in your bulletin and in the Knox News.
Jesus was written by Joseph Scrivens, who was born in Ireland in 1819. After receiving his university degree from Trinity College in London, he quickly established himself as a teacher, fell in love, and made plans to settle in his hometown. Then tragedy struck. The day before his scheduled wedding, his fiancée drowned. Overcome with grief, Scrivens left Ireland to a new life in Canada. He established a home in Rice Lake, he met and fell in love with Eliza Rice. Just weeks before she was to become Joseph Scrivens' bride, she suddenly grew sick. In a matter of weeks, Eliza died. A shattered Scrivens turned to the only thing that had angered him during his life, his faith. Through prayer and Bible study, he found not only solace, but a mission. The 25-year-old Scrivens, a vow of poverty, sold all his earthly possessions and vowed to give his life physically handicapped, and financially destitute. Some 10 years later, Scriven received word that his mother had become very ill. The man who had taken a vow of poverty did not have the funds to go home and care for her. Heartsick and feeling the need to reach out to her, he wrote the story of his life in 3 short verses called What a Friend We Have in Jesus. Later, Scriven would say that the Lord and I together. Ironically, Joseph Scriven drowned in a Canadian lake in 1886. He did not live to see his song carried to every corner of the world.
whatever you do. It's okay, whatever you can do.
No, it's on, so I don't know why it's not.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's too bad.
Yeah.
That's a couple of people are going, I can't hear what's going to say.
Church cemetery was the only United Church cemetery in the West, and it had to be the town cemetery. And the closest lots to the cemetery closest to the cemetery were not desirable. The owner gave us a good deal. We sold our little church on the highway, our new mass, and an adjacent block, and the small United Church in Harrington to buy our new district's property. In 1978, the sod was turned for this church. During construction, we gathered for weekly Sunday services in the Catholic Church on Bentley Road. The grand opening of this Knox Church in 1979 was a wonderful service with many visitors and dignitaries. It was a beautiful building with a multi-purpose sanctuary, kitchen, lounge, library, offices, Sunday school rooms, church choir, and balcony. So, and it was this way. Within 6 months, we were buying 50 new chairs to accommodate everyone. God has truly blessed this church. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Jane Walker.
Jennifer approaching me to take part in this anniversary service has certainly given me pause to reflect on the last 40 years and makes me feel pretty old. I first got involved at Knox in 1978 when our son was to be baptized at my childhood church in North Vancouver. At that time, it was suggested that I contact and become involved in my local church, which is Knox. Little did I know what an important role Knox would play in my family's life. I was soon asked to be a Sunday school teacher and started, as Brenda mentioned, at the Catholic Church. With the opening of the new building, there came great excitement with the large space we had, and our Sunday school and congregation grew, and there were so many wonderful activities to become involved with in the new building here. It was a few years later when I saw how amazing this congregation is. My young husband at the time died of cancer, and we received, myself and my three little boys, so much love and support and food from the Knox Church family. My husband's memorial service was held here, and following the birth of our third little boy, the church showed their love with a baby shower and celebrated together with me at Andrew's baptism. A while later, the church rejoiced when Ray and I were married in this building, and he and his little daughter, Ashley, were soon enveloped into the life of Knox. As parents, we felt so fortunate that there were so many activities for our children in this building throughout the week. There were cups and scouts, choir for the children and adults, youth group, and lots of social activities for Ray and me to become involved in and other things. Our kids formed some lifelong friendships here. Things have changed over the years, but the wonderful essence of Knox remains the same to this day, and for that, I am very grateful.
How Great Thou Art is based on a traditional Swedish melody and a poem written by Carl Hobart in 1885. It was popularized by George Fairley Shea and Cliff Ferris during the Billy Graham Crusades. How Great Thou Art is, of course, one of the most popular hymns of all time. The inspiration for the poem came from a time when Bulbert was walking home from church and listening to the bells. A sudden storm got Bulbert's attention, and just as suddenly as it had made its appearance, it subsided and a rainbow appeared. When Bulbert arrived at his home, he opened the window, looked out, and saw a bay of water in front of him that was like a mirror. From the woods on the other side of the bay, he heard the song of the thrush and the church bells tolling in the quiet evening. It was this series of sights, sounds, and experiences that inspired the writing.
Oh, great, 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 oh
wonderful to be here celebrating this anniversary of our church. And as I look around, I see the church that's a whole lot better, in a whole lot better shape than I am. As we look back at the history of our church, we are struck by the fact that the women have always been ready and willing to give support and love and care wherever and whenever it is needed. When the church is united in 1925 to create the United Church of Canada, two women's groups were named, the Women's Association, or as it became known as the WA. The WA saw that the manse, the home the local church provided for the minister and family, was provided with all the necessities. And for the minister and the family, and this included furnishing the manse, which the women were responsible for. The other group of women at that time was the Women's Missionary Society, or the WMS, who provided thoughtful acts of support, such as writing letters to the missionaries who offered to go to the distant lands and work there as nurses, teachers, and be involved in other church work. The people who were left behind kept writing letters and encouraging these people in this far-off land, in the far-off lands they had chosen to go to. In 1962, the WMS and the WA became one group known as the United Church Women, or the UCW, and they are the group that are with us today. The United Church women, until very recently, did all the catering for funerals held in our church. It's recently been carried on by someone at another group. The UCW sends cards when members of the church are ill or or when they are celebrating special birthdays or anniversaries. They prepare the Christmas cards for each person in a care facility at this season. This year, they are giving 378 cards. They have collected thousands of Campbell soup labels in exchange for sports equipment or classroom equipment, which is lacking in inner city schools or in immediate areas. Pounds of pull tabs from cans are being collected to provide sleep apnea blankets for newborn babies in surrounding hospitals. When my husband and I spent 2 years as volunteers working in Kenya, our Parksville UCW sent us $100 every month for 2 years to pay for first aid supplies and chloroquine pills for people with malaria. A few years ago, a new informal group of Sisters United was formed for women who were interested in fellowship, and it has attracted many women who meet monthly and enjoy a dinner followed by a speaker. And so the women carry on year after year, and in so doing have helped make this church the special place it is today.
The choir will now sing an anthem that contains two very familiar hymns, Amazing Grace and Peace Like a River. Because Like a River was written by Horatio Spafford, a dramatic man in his life. Spafford had traveled to Europe with his family. In a late change of plans, he sent his family ahead as he was delayed on business concerns following the Great Chicago Fire. While crossing the Atlantic Ocean, their ship sank rapidly after a collision with another vessel. And sadly, all four of Spafford's daughters died. His wife Anna survived and sent him the now famous telegram, "Saved alone." Shortly afterwards, as Spafford traveled to meet his grieving wife, he was inspired to write these words as his ship passed near the location where his daughters had died. The list begins musical composer, called his tune, "Build to Have," the name of the summer ship. "Amazing Grace," likely the most popular hymn of all time, was written by John Newton, a former slave trader. The hymn begins with a powerful line, "Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me." It comes from Newton's own experience as a slave trader, specifically from a near-death experience he had decades earlier, when the slave ship he was traveling on encountered a violent storm, prompting him to convert to Christianity.
Thank you.
lost many friends in 1988, friends who worshiped and we socialized with. It was in 1988, after years of study and discussion, General Council of United Church declared, quote, all persons, regardless of sexual orientation, who profess faith in Jesus Christ are welcome to become members of the United Church of Canada. And that, quote, all members of the United Church are eligible to be considered for ordained ministry. This declaration also said there is now a decision left to individual congregations. This became the most divisive debate in the church's history. The minister of Knox at this time spoke against the declaration, and with a group of influential members of the congregation campaigned against it. The debate was heated, fearful, emotional. And two of the more polite comments, most common comments were, they should go and be in their own church. This is our church. This is my church. If you support this, then it's time for you to leave. While this debate raged with Knox, a number of ministers and congregations across Canada who were opposed initiated legal proceedings over the ownerships of their church, suggesting that if the majority were opposed, then the church belonged to them. And as a result, it was up to those in support to decide if they would stay or leave. The court rejected this position, stating that churches in essence belong to the United Church of Canada, and that ownership of one issue, even when supported by a majority, was not a determining factor of ownership. There were hurt feelings and broken hearts in Knox. Almost 40% followed the minister to form a new church, or a just one. The consequences were devastating, financially, emotionally, and spiritually. There was no minister, no staff. There was a mortgage to pay, declining givings, and a serious operating deficit. But everyone put aside their personal opinions, the hurt and the anger, and focused on the greater good of the church. People didn't hesitate to offer their time and talent. Some of them are sitting with us today. It is just unbelievable how many volunteers served as office secretary, custodian, groundkeepers, others in their own quiet way. Made sure the garbage was collected, the kitchen was tidy, coffee was ready, the carpets were vacuumed, etc. Those with special talents and skills stepped forward to help with repairs and maintenance. Ministers volunteered to come and lead services. When offered payment, they declined. For me, the most influential leaders George Ratcliffe and his wife Ruth. George had served as the United Church minister at seven churches throughout BC. For 5 years, he was presbytery officer for the Vancouver Island Presbytery. Both are buried in our cemetery. George Ratcliffe sat at seven feet. And Mara Deer, gentle pastor, great preacher. He was truly loved. I was at that. Lee Reese loved and admired. She lived a Christian life with conviction, a generous heart, true courage, and a twinkle in her eye. I wonder what my legacy will be. What her legacy will be. Following a hostile confrontation I experienced in an RFS at one congregational meeting, Pro took me aside, and I can still hear her. Lives and Other Children's Handbook that was written by a Sunday school teacher for her class. Priscilla Owens was inspired by the Bible passage, Hebrews 6, verse 19. We have this hope as an anchor for the soul, firm and secure. The hymn suggests that throughout the challenges and storms of our lives, spiritual resilience comes from God's presence. Owens herself was a prolific gospel songwriter. Beside her hymnal is 230 of her songs.
I'm still learning to surrender to God's teaching and shaping.
offerings at Knox are helping me with this. On the website, I noticed that a prayer group gathered on Monday. In July, I showed up, and though I have no experience, was openly welcomed to the Centering Prayer Group that I had been together several months. Today, I most appreciate that after we sit in silence, there is an invitation to share our experiences with the practice and often what happens with the sharing of some of our life's experiences. I leave feeling connected, heard, and encouraged. In August, I started attending the Bible study group. I experience a safe place where I feel free to ask any questions as I continue to search for an understanding of who God is, especially in loss and suffering. Other experiences, such as an immersion into the fall fair, the welcoming prayer workshop, and breakfast with Kathy from Pastoral Care, have left me knowing God as a place of connection and learning. I experience teaching that fits with my evolving faith. I see arms extending into the community. I see generous hearts. I see a willingness to find a way through. These are the things that draw me in. Thank you for every invitation and act of kindness.
We are Pilgrims, the Servant Song. It's a comparatively new song. It was first published in 1978 on a record album called Father Make Us One, and later in Songs of Praise, a book now widely used in New Zealand. The writer is Richard Gillard, who was born in England, but moved to New Zealand with his family at the age of three. He had no formal music training and considers himself a self-taught guitarist. Much of his music is folk style. Matthew 20, 26-28 provides the primary scriptural background for this song. Whoever wants to become great amongst you must be your servant. Whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Clearly, Richard Gillard felt the need to influence people of faith being united in their service to God and supporting each other through life's ups and downs. Good message in